Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, page 19, all the cowherd men, including Nanda Maharaj, used to talk of the wonderful activities of Lord Krishna and Balaram, and they were always so much absorbed in those talks that they forgot the threefold miseries of this material existence. This is the effect of Krishna consciousness. What was enjoyed 5,000 years ago by Nanda Maharaj can still be enjoyed by Krishna conscious persons simply by talking about the transcendental pastimes of Krishna and his associates. And so they forget about it. It's not that they're not there. They just forget about them. It's not important. In his Krishna Sandarbha Anucheda 142, Srila Jiva Goswami writes, if Prahlad Maharaj and other great devotees who have completely surrendered to the Supreme Lord may remain in family life, apparently attached to family and home, then why should anyone think that simply because the residents of Madhavan are householders and are not renounced sannyasis, therefore they cannot be eternal associates of the Lord? The residents of Vrindavan are eternally dear to Lord Krishna, and they are perfectly situated in the highest platform of spiritual happiness, free from all contact of the material energy. Mm-hmm. So the point is if you're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then you're transcendental. That's what makes you transcendental. Mm-hmm. Because it's not the external religion that makes you transcendental. It's the eternal religion that makes you transcendental. Right? So renunciation, knowledge, household life, all these things are secondary aspects of religion. And so the primary one is the sat dharma, is always remembering Krishna and never forgetting. So then that means that these secondary dharmas are there for the purpose of supporting and expressing the primary dharma, which is to remember Krishna and not forget everything. Shri Sukadeva Goswami concluded, in this way, Krishna and Balaram passed their childhood age in Brajabhumi by engaging in activities of childish play, such as playing hide and seek, constructing a make-believe bridge on the ocean, and jumping here and there like monkeys. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, thus Balaram and Krishna enjoyed their childhood pastimes imitating Lord Ramachandra's monkeys, who constructed the bridge over the ocean, and Hanuman, who jumped over the water to Ceylon. They used to imitate such pastimes along with their friends and so happily passed their childhood life. So they're playing with Krishna and they're absorbed in pastimes of Krishna and his different incarnations. So everything, that's the whole point. You're absorbed like this, then one is not affected by the modes of nature. Right? But that's just coming as a side benefit. The real point is the ecstasy that's there in tasting Krishna consciousness. Conclusion. Pratigya. To pure devotees throughout the world who could understand his activities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, exhibited how much he could be subdued by his devotees, his servants. Hatred, because though he is the controller of Brahma and Shiva and others, Krishna is controlled at every step by the inhabitants of Braja. Udaharana. The gopis would say, if you dance, my dear Krishna, then I shall give you half a sweetmeat. By saying these words or by clapping their hands, all the gopis encouraged Krishna in different ways. At such times, although he was the supremely powerful personality of Godhead, he would smile and dance according to their desire. as if he were a wooden doll in their hands. Sometimes he would sing very loudly at their bidding. In this way, Krishna became completely under the control of the gopis. Because the idea is that you can get somebody to do something, then that's very nice. So they were just controlling Krishna and getting him to do all these things to please him, and then he's pleasing them. So everybody's happy. Sometimes Mother Jashoda and her gopi friends would tell Krishna, bring this article or bring that article. Sometimes they would order him to bring a big wooden plank, wooden shoes, or a wooden measuring pot. And Krishna, when thus ordered by the mothers, would try to bring them. Sometimes, however, as if unable to raise these things, he would touch them and stand there, just to invite the pleasure of his relatives. He would strike his body with his arms, to show he has sufficient strength. Like his wrestlers, they'll do that. They'll strike their arms, you know, like that. So they would just laugh and they would enjoy the whole situation. Upanaya. That Krishna performed childhood pastimes to increase the pleasure of his devotees was another transcendental humor. He exhibited these activities not only to the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, but also to others who were captivated by his external potency and opulence. Both the internal devotees who were simply absorbed in love of Krishna and the external devotees who were captivated by the unlimited potency were informed of Krishna's desire to be submissive to his service. Nigamana. In this way, he increased the pleasure of the Brajabhasis by his childhood activities. And so he's increasing their pleasure and their surrender to him, and because of that, it's increasing his pleasure. Chapter 12, The Killing of the Demon Agasura. Particular. If even only once, or even by force, one brings the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead into one's mind, one can attain the supreme salvation by the mercy of Krishna. Because the causes and effects of the material world, both higher and lower, are all created by the Supreme Lord, the original controller. Indeed, he showed such great mercy that even Agasura, the most sinful miscreant, was elevated to being one of his associates and achieving Swarupya Mukti, which is actually impossible for materially contaminated persons to obtain. Simply by thinking of Krishna, one can attain him very easily. Krishna is also described as having his lotus feet always within the heart of his devotees. In the case of Agasura, one may argue that he was not a devotee. The answer to this is that he thought of Krishna for a moment with devotion. Bhaktyaham ekaya grahya. Without devotion, one cannot think of Krishna. And conversely, whenever one thinks of Krishna, one undoubtedly has devotion. What then is to be said of those whose hearts the Supreme Personality of Godhead enters when he appears as an incarnation, or those who always think of the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the source of transcendental bliss for all living entities, and by whom all illusion is completely removed? Chapter 12 summarizes questions and answers. Maharaj Parikshit asked Srila Sukadeva Goswami question 10-12 of Srimad Bhagavatam. From Srimad Bhagavatam, 10-12-41-42. Maharaj Parikshit inquired, O great sage, how could things done in the past have been described as being done at present? Lord Sri Krishna performed the pastime of killing Agasura during his Kumara age. How then, during his Pauganda age, could the boys have described this incident as having happened recently? O greatest yogi, my spiritual master, kindly describe why this happened. I am very much curious to know about it. I think that it was nothing but another illusion due to Krishna. Srila Sukadeva Goswami fulfills this request in the next two chapters. The rhetorical questions uttered in verses 11, 12, 19, 24, 28, and 39 do not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes in detail Krishna's pastime of killing Agasura. One day, Krishna wanted to enjoy a picnic lunch within the forest, and therefore he went out early into the forest with the other cowherd boys, accompanied by their respective groups of calves. While they were enjoying their picnic, Agasura, the younger brother of Putana and Bakasura, appeared there. Right, you see, there are all these groups. Right, so they all appeared there, desiring to kill Krishna and his companions. The demon who had been sent by Kamsa assumed the form of a python, expanding himself to a length of 8 miles and to the height of a mountain. His mouth seeming to extend from the surface of the earth to the heavenly planets. Having assumed this feature, Agasura lay on the road. Krishna's friends, the cowherd boys, thought that the demon's form was one of the beautiful spots of Vrindavan. Thus they wanted to enter into the mouth of this gigantic python. The gigantic figure of the python became a subject for their sporting pleasure. And they began to laugh, confident that even if this figure were dangerous, Krishna was there to protect them, right? Because he's killed all the other demons, so. Okay. In this way, they proceeded towards the mouth of the gigantic figure. Krishna knew everything about Agasura, and therefore he wanted to forbid his friends to enter the demon's mouth. But in the meantime, all the cowherd boys, along with their groups of calves, entered the mouth of the gigantic figure. Krishna was waiting outside, and Agasura was waiting for Krishna, thinking that as soon as Krishna entered, he would close his mouth so that everyone would die. While waiting for Krishna, he refrained from swallowing the boys. In the meantime, Krishna was thinking of how to save the boys and kill Agasura. Thus he entered the mouth of the gigantic Asura, and when he was within the demon's mouth, along with his friends, he expanded his body to such an extent that the Asura suffocated and died. After this, Krishna, by casting his nectarian glance upon his friends, brought them back to life, and with pleasure they all came out unhurt. Thus Krishna encouraged all the demigods, and they expressed their pleasure and happiness. For a crooked, sinful person, there is no scope of Sayujya Mukti, or becoming one with the effulgence of Krishna. But because the Supreme Personality of Godhead entered the body of Agasura, by his touch, this demon got the opportunity to emerge into the existence of the Brahman effulgence, and thus attained Sayujya Mukti. When this pastime was performed, Krishna was only 5 years old. 1 year later, when he was 6 years old, and he stepped into the Pauganda age, this pastime was disclosed to the inhabitants of Braja. Parikshit Maharaj inquired, "Why is it that this pastime was disclosed only after 1 year, and yet the inhabitants of Braja thought that it had been performed that very day?" With this question, the 12th chapter ends. So we see here he's going on with the childhood pastimes. Mm-hmm. But this one then is connected with the next pastime, the Brahma Vimohan Lila. Mm-hmm. Right? So the previous was just general what they would do. You know, they're playing and everything like this. But now in this chapter, then he describes Agasura.
Right. Here in the
he attains which one? Sarupya. Because he'll merge into the body of the Lord, and then in that state, that purified state, then they'll be there for some time, and then when they become active, they'll remember the Lord. And so because they're purified, then they can appreciate his position. And so then they'll move forward to Sarupya. Like that. So that's the unique, because they're killed by Krishna. The materialists and all that, they can't do that at all. So even to get Sayujya is very difficult, let alone Sarupya. So they, because one may ask, what then all the impersonalists who merge into the Brahman, why don't they move forward? Because they have no experience of Krishna. Therefore, when they become active within the Brahman and think of activities, the only activities they have to think of are material. So they come back to the material world. While those demons killed by Krishna, they merge in Brahman. And when they become active, then they're going to think of activities. Now, as a liberated soul, are the activities of the material world going to be attractive, or Krishna's activities? Krishna, so then they move forward to the spiritual world. Is that correct? Yeah. Shloka Anusharanam, verses 1 to 12. Krishna and the Gopas go on an excursion. 13 to 40, the story of the Agasura demon. 41-44, Maharaj Parikshit wonders why the story was untold for a year. Verses 1-12, Krishna and the Gopas go on an excursion. Sukadeva Goswami continued, O king, one day Krishna decided to take his breakfast as a picnic in the forest. Because generally he eats breakfast in Nandigam, right? And that with the cowherd boys there, but today he wants to go early. So then Mother Yashoda then, you know, would have packed things, they would have taken it out, and they would have eaten their breakfast out in the forest. Having risen early in the morning, he blew his bugle made of horn and woke all the cowherd boys and calves with its beautiful sound. Then Krishna and the boys, keeping their respective groups of calves before them, proceeded from Brajabhumi to the forest. At that time, hundreds and thousands of cowherd boys came out of their respective homes in Brajabhumi and joined Krishna, keeping before them their hundreds and thousands of groups of calves. The boys were very beautiful, and they were equipped with lunch bags, bugles, flutes, sticks for controlling the calves, along with the cowherd boys and their own group of calves. Krishna came out with along with the cowherd boys and their own groups of calves, Krishna came out with an unlimited number of calves assembled. Then all the boys began to sport in the forest in a greatly playful spirit. Footnote 9. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verses 1 and 3 to Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakura's book. Explanation. Because here is Krishna going out with the cowherd boys, they take their calves, they're doing all these things, then that pleases Krishna. The cowherd boys doing those things with them, then they taste that love of Krishna. Him doing it with them, they taste their love for him. So it's rasa all around, the unlimited dimensions of rasa. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura elaborates, Krishna had Ashankyata calves. Ashankyata is a one followed by 17 zeros, 100 quadrillion. One should not say, however, that that many cows cannot fit in the 16 krosha, 32-mile area of Vrindavan. Because by the inconceivable energy of the Lord, the Dhamma is unlimited. In one portion of the Dham, the billions of universes, each measuring 50 koti yojanas, 500 million yojanas, or 4 trillion miles, fits. Krishna sows this to Brahma in a later chapter. It is said in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that because the Lord associates and the Dham are inconceivable, have inconceivable power, there are no obstacles. So, it's unlimited, but it's within a size. That's the whole point, is because within a size you can relate, you can deal, but at the same time it's unlimited. That's the Lord's inconceivable potency. So that's why materialists can't understand these things. Even great scholars, they can't understand these things. So when you say Ashankyata, then it just means uncountable. So you put 100 quadrillion. So, you know, a billion, then three more zillions, zeros, you get a trillion, three more zeros, you get a quadrillion. So another 100 of those. So, you know, it's just a good amount. Srila Prabhupada adds. In this verse, the words Krishna Vatsar Ashankyatahi are significant. The word Ashankyata means unlimited. Krishna's calves were unlimited. We speak of hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, billions, trillions, tens of trillions, and so on. But when we go further, we speak of numbers impossible for us to count. We are speaking of unlimited numbers. Such unlimited numbers are indicated here by the word Ashankyatahi. Krishna is unlimited. His potency is unlimited. His cows and calves are unlimited. And his space is unlimited. Therefore, he is described in Bhagavad Gita as Parabrahman. The word Brahman means unlimited, and Krishna is the supreme, unlimited, Parabrahman. Therefore, we should not consider the statements of this verse to be mythological. They are factual, but inconceivable. Krishna can accommodate an unlimited number of calves and an unlimited measure of space. This is neither mythological nor false, but if we study Krishna's potency with our limited knowledge, that potency will never be possible to understand. So we know he does these wonderful things. That's why you see, like on Maharas, there'll be millions of gopis come. And on the other night, it's just whatever he likes. That's how it's going to work. Like that. So when it says he's surrounded by hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis, then that's just to give us a decent idea, but actually there's more. Because if we say hundreds of thousands, then we're going to go, wow, you know, very opulent, yeah, he's the supreme, this and that. But if we go billions, trillions, quadrillions, is it, where do they fit? You know, you're not even going to worry about him being the supreme and he having that many Lakshmis. You'll worry about, you know, where's the space? How is that going to work? You know, what if someone has to go to the bathroom? Like, you know, stuff like that. Sukadev Goswami continued, although all these boys were already decorated by their mothers with ornaments of kacha, gunja, pearls, and gold, when they went into the forest, they further decorated themselves with fruits, green leaves, bunches of flowers, peacock feathers, and soft minerals. Right, so you see here, kacha. So then they wear kacha, means like dhotis, like that, there's a kacha. Or the chudders folded up, that's kacha. You know, the other cloth is folded like that, is kacha. Does that make sense? Like that. And then they have all these other that are on top of that. Because otherwise, if they go out with no clothes and just gunja, pearls, and gold, then it's, you know, it may work for, what is it, Circeus? But, you know, for the boys, they wear some clothes first. Okay? And then they further decorated themselves. Peacock feathers, right? So even though some people have this real, real important, you know, thing that only Krishna wears a peacock feather, they decorate themselves with peacock feathers. The point is, Krishna always wears. Every day he wears. The other ones, when they're available, they put them on. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. It's not important. All the coward boys used to steal one another's lunch bags. When a boy came to understand that his bag had been taken away, the other boys would throw it farther away, to a more distant place. And those standing there would throw it still farther, right? So then you have to chase after your lunch bag, right? When the proprietor of the bag became disappointed, the other boys would laugh, right? So as long as he's chasing, it's good fun, but as soon as then, you know, because you don't laugh until then, right? The other boys would laugh, the proprietor would cry, and then the bag would be returned, right? So they keep throwing it, they'd be running. When they gave up, then they'd become frustrated, so then everyone would laugh, but then when the boy would cry, because he really wants his lunch, then they would give it back. So, like that. Private comments. This kind of playing and stealing among boys still exists, even in the material world, because this kind of sporting pleasure is present in the spiritual world, from which this idea of enjoyment emanates. Janmadyasyayataha, Srimad Bhagavatam 111, Vedanta Sutra 112. The same enjoyment is displayed by Krishna and his associates in the spiritual world, but there the enjoyment is eternal, whereas here on the material platform it is temporary. There the enjoyment is Brahman, whereas here, the enjoyment is jada. The Krishna conscious movement is meant to train one how to transfer oneself from the jada to the Brahman, because human life is meant for that purpose. And so by absorption in Krishna and his pastimes, we can switch from the material world, the temporary, to the Brahman, the eternal. So that's what we're trying to do. So by going through these, we get an understanding of Krishna, we get an attraction to Krishna, that brings us closer to Krishna, we become more situated in serving the devotees, associating with devotees, serving the holy name, serving the mission, and this way then we become closer and closer to Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami continued, sometimes Krishna would go to a somewhat distant place to see the beauty of the forest. Then all the other boys would run to accompany him, each one saying, I shall be the first to run and touch Krishna. I shall touch Krishna first. In this way they enjoyed life by repeatedly touching Krishna. All the boys would be differently engaged. Some boys blew their flutes, and others blew bugles made of horn. Some imitated the buzzing of the bumblebees, and others imitated the voice of the cuckoo. Some boys imitated flying birds by running after the bird's shadows on the ground. Some imitated the beautiful movements and attractive postures of the swans. Some sat down with the ducks, sitting silently, and others imitated the dancing of the peacocks. Some boys attracted young monkeys in the trees. Some jumped into the trees, imitating the monkeys. Some made faces as the monkeys were accustomed to do, and others jumped from one branch to another. Some boys went to the waterfalls and crossed over the river, jumping with the frogs. When they saw their own reflections on the water, they would laugh. They would also condemn the sounds of their own echoes. Footnote 10. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 6, 8, and 10 to the Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, The Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So this aspect, they're just enjoying all these things to please Krishna. So that becomes, you know, it's just environment in which now they can interact with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada comments, as recommended by Srila Rupa Goswami, tasmat kenapi upa yena mana krishne niveshayet. Bhakti. I skipped something.
In this way, all the passages.
I missed footnote 10. Oh, that was footnote 10.
After footnote 10.
Oh, I see. Because then I saw footnote 11, and I thought we okay. I got it. In this way, all the cowherd boys used to play with Krishna, who is the source of the Brahman effulgence. For jnanis desiring to merge into that effulgence, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For devotees who have accepted eternal servitorship. And for ordinary persons, is but another ordinary child. The cowherd boys, having accumulated the results of pious activities for many lives, were able to associate in this way with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can one explain their great fortune? So this many lives of pious activities, this is devotional activity. So it's devotional service that makes the difference, not something else. So when they say pious here, doesn't mean they did so many ashramedi yajnas or something. No, piety here means devotional service. There isn't something else that can... See? Footnote 11. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 39 to 40. How did that work? So he probably means it in a different numbering, because this is only to Bhagavad Akramichimala chapter 6, entitled Tasting the Sublime Nature of Relationship with the Lord, Bhagavat Rasa Tattvam, which is in the Sambandha section of the Thakur's book. So we see is the jnanis, then they taste the aspect of the Brahman effulgence, the devotees, you know, then they who accept the eternal servitorship, they taste that Vaikuntha Ras. Ordinary persons, they taste them just as an ordinary child. The cowherd boys, then they taste in the way that they're tasting. So that's the thing, is that all these relationships, as you surrender to Krishna, how you interact with him is how he reciprocates. Right? So because of their affection, he reciprocates as the cowherd boy. Srila Prabhupada comments, as recommended by Srila Rupa Goswami, tasmat kenap upayena Mana Krishne Nive Shaye. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.4. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.1.32. Somehow or another, whether one thinks of Krishna as an ordinary human child, as the source of the Brahman effulgence, as the origin of Paramatma, or as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one should concentrate one's full attention upon the lotus feet of Krishna. That is also the instruction of Bhagavad Gita, 1866. Sarva dharmam parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja. Srimad Bhagavatam is the easiest way of directly approaching Krishna. Ishvara sadyo hrid yavarudyate tara kritibi shushru shubis tat shanat. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.2. Diverting even a little of one's attention towards Krishna and activities in Krishna consciousness immediately enables one to achieve the highest perfection of life. This is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. Yeah. So we're trying to find ways to divert people's attention to Krishna. So however that is. So seeing that that's the purpose, to divert everyone's attention to Krishna, then all other purposes of the society should be for that purpose. Right? So we see the seven purposes of ISKCON are for the purpose of diverting people's attention to Krishna. That's the only point. Yes?
Related to this, like, the attention to, you know, like in West, the preaching has had a lot of, you know, nice, enthusiastic ladies to do the preaching, and it has had some effects. But, like, in the long run, like, what's required that they, as a devotee, will be successful in that sense, because many times, you know, they come from the background of, not anybody here, but saying that karma is a train to be like more like, I could say, depend on everyone. If the extrovert mental society ladies or something like that. And then it doesn't create, it creates a short term, you know, result in the interest of that, but you know, interest of it's not conscious, but something is lacking. So what is technically, what is needed, you know, in that sense, for those persons to be survived, and what goes wrong?
The point is that you're always coming in contact with something that will remind you of Krishna. Because the more we're reminded of Krishna, then the more then we start to be inclined towards Krishna, not the material world. So as long as we think that things of this material world are of value, then we'll be distracted. So then Prabhupada's pointing out the purpose of this movement is to create opportunities to become distracted from the material world to the spiritual world. And if that increases, then like we see with the cowherd boys, that they, that volume of piety that they have, now they're eternal associates of the Lord. But it's only through that great volumes of devotional attraction to Krishna that will get them to that point. But you have to start somewhere. That piety starts somewhere. So in the association of devotees, then we take up doing things in connection with Krishna, and then that makes everything perfect. It's just a matter of time. Because everybody comes from a variety of different backgrounds, so the conditioning will have a variety, but the souls are all the same. They all have the same nature. Therefore, all souls can be attracted to Krishna. Is that what I think? So by creating that environment by which they are attracted to Krishna, that everyone can be. It's just a matter of finding opportunities where these materialists hang out. And then in that environment, how would you catch their attention? Like that. Okay. Lokasya janato vidvams chakre satvata samhitam. Srimad Bhagavatam 176. The secret of success is unknown to people in general, and therefore Srila Vyasadeva, being compassionate towards the poor souls in this material world, especially in this age of Kali, has given us the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yad Vaishnavanam Priya. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.13.18. For Vaishnavas who are somewhat advanced, or who are fully aware of the glories of, and potencies of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam is a beloved Vedic literature. After all, we have to change this body. Tata de hantara praptihi, Bhagavad Gita 2.13. We do not care about Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. We do not know what the next body will be. But if one adheres to these two books, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, one is sure to attain the association of Krishna in the next life. Chyaktva deham punarjanma naitimam eti sorjuna. Bhagavad Gita 4.9. Therefore, distribution of Srimad Bhagavatam all over the world is a great welfare activity for theologians, philosophers, transcendentalists, and yogis. Yoginam api sarvesham. Bhagavad Gita 6.47. As well as for people in general. Janma labha. No. Janma labha paraf humsham ante narayana smritihi. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.16. If we can somehow or other remember Krishna, Narayana, at the end of life, our life will be successful. And so the idea is that if they come in contact with Bhagavatam, they hear about and all that, then they'll start to get purified. Because we're looking at that the karmis are actually in control of their position. And therefore, then, thinking if they come across things, then they may not be very pleased. But the point is they just act according to the modes of nature by their consciousness. But at the same time, if they come in contact with the Vedic literatures, having come in contact, they get purified. That's not under the modes. So when that happens regularly enough, at some point, they take up Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense?
Like us?
Like us, yes. So sometimes it's thought by the modern kind of perspective of the media, that, oh, any bad media is bad, everything will be destroyed, everything will be ruined. But if that's the case, how does so many celebrities become celebrities because of bad media? Right? And here we are afraid of it. In the media circle, there's no such thing as bad media. Right? So the point is that they've come in contact. They're getting both. They may think the way they think, but they think that way anyway. Right? They're already impure. So it's not that coming across Krishna consciousness made them impure. No, they're already impure. That's why they think the way they do. But having come in contact with Krishna, then there'll be a benefit. But, of course, if they make an offense, that will stop any progress now, right? And then, you know, later they'll get the other benefit. But then by coming in regularly in contact, they see it changes their consciousness. Right? Is that what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that people will change because it's the soul that you're dealing with. The conditioning just happens to be the filter. Right? But the soul is what you're dealing with. You know, this idea, oh no, we're dealing with Westerners, we're dealing with non-devotees. Mm-hmm. No, you're dealing with souls. They think they're Westerners, they think they're non-devotees, but they're not actually. They're also servants of Krishna, they just don't know it. Mm-hmm. But that's why one preaches, you know, enthusiastically. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if we look at it, what would the karmis like us to do? Right? Is there some karmi in the sea? What does he want you to do? First of all, stay out of his way. Don't touch him. Now, if he can exploit you in some way, and some way or another get, you know, money, beauty, fame, knowledge, renunciation, or, you know, or power, he'll do it. Do we miss out on anything? So in other words, there is nothing you can do to please a karmi. So this idea is that we can please them, that is not real. It's an illusion. They can't please themselves. How are we going to please them? So the thing one has to do is then find situations in which one can introduce Krishna consciousness. And in such a way that it keeps it, you know, sustainable and other things like that. Does that make sense? So you find something, then it works.
So if they are not pleased, how can they are ready to hear from you?
Because the point is they're never ready to hear. When is a karmi ready to hear about God consciousness, that he's not the body, and material enjoyment's a total waste, absolute waste of time, and the only solution to all his problems in life is Krishna consciousness? When is any karmi ready to hear that? Is that a thing? So you can only try to create piety within them that will generate the interest to hear by exposing them to Krishna consciousness. So you make big programs, you make festivals, you go out, you make it all happening, and this way then they like it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing that you do. You can't do something, because there's nothing the karmis do that will please the karmis. You know what I'm saying? You can fit things into what they're doing, but you have to do it in our own way. Just like, let's say, at the, what is it? Rose Bowl? Is that it? The parade? The flowers? Yeah. You have a thing in America called the Rose Bowl parade. So they have all these floats that are just flowers. I think they're all roses, but they're all flowers. And so so many different people, individuals, companies, everything, they all make these floats. And then there's a big festival, people line the roads, it's on television, it's a big, big thing. So the devotees, then they get a permit, they make one, but then on that we'll have a Krishna conscious theme. And much of the time, because what are they going to do? They have kind of the same old stuff they're going to do over and over again. But we have like unlimited stuff that they've never even seen before. So it's not often, it's not an uncommon thing that we don't get some award. Either the best float or the most unique float, different design, you know, something we get. But that means you got hundreds of thousands of millions of people seeing that. So now if we just made a float without Krishna, because worried, oh, it might disturb the karmis, then what benefit would they get? We've just wasted a lot of money on flowers. You know what I'm saying? So it's a matter of, in what situation can we inject Krishna in? But you have to inject Krishna. You can't not inject and then say that it's preaching. You understand? You know, so it's not that you have that and then you have a bunch of devotees there in karmi clothes, you know, playing on guitars, singing Shiva bhajans. Because we're just, you know, introducing them, warming them up, you know. After 200 years, then we might, you know, throw in a Hare Krishna, you know, like that. You know, so that's not how it works. You do these things, it's cultural. What do they care? You know what I'm saying? When it comes to culture, people get involved in so many ways. Then they have their day-to-day life. So that's why it's cultural revolution. You're using the culture, you expose people to Krishna consciousness. You see, because otherwise, the karmi is never ready to hear that you're not going to enjoy, you're not the controller and enjoyer, and you're not going to be happy. They don't want to hear that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's the whole point. You know, you tell them that, you know, you go to heaven, you'll enjoy, that's okay. Right? But and then you can tell them to go back to Godhead and enjoy it. That's cool also. But to go to heaven, you need to give up anything. You know, in the modern world religion context, you have to give up anything? No. So then it's enjoyment all the way. But we're saying you have to give up material enjoyment to get the eternal spiritual enjoyment. Who wants to hear that? Nobody. You can say, no, but sometimes the karmis will listen, you know, when they're frustrated. Yeah, when they're frustrated. So we're going to just sit around and wait till the guy's frustrated? No, we put out Krishna consciousness. Those who are frustrated, they'll come forth more seriously. And the other ones, then they'll get some benefit. Does that make sense?
Should we cover the medicine with sugar? You know,
what do you call sugar? Seeing that in China, I have never come across a sweet that is sweet. What do you mean by sugar? Okay, you take a baozi, which is not sweet or salty, and you put a little bit of sweetened bean, you know, paste inside, which is really small compared to it. Like that? See, sweet means you take that baozi and you cover it in powdered sugar or drop it into sugar syrup. Right? You know, sweet Momo. Bengalis would like it. You know, in the middle you put like, you know, put pistachio and saffron and all that kind of thing. Interesting, right? Yeah, they'd be like a Raj's bowl, right?
In that sense, traditional medicine, we give medicine, but cold, mixed with honey. You know,
so it's, yeah, so? Better. Krishna's pastimes aren't sweet? The holy name is not sweet? If you have a person who has a bad liver, can they taste sweetness? No. So even though it is covered in sugar, it is sugar. It's the purest form of sugar. But they may not be able to appreciate it. That's why you have to keep... But what happens when that person that has that jaundice keeps taking the sugar? It slowly, slowly corrects their liver, and then they can start... First, then it becomes neutral, then it starts to become sweet. Yeah? So that's the whole point. You just have to keep exposing them to this sugar. But whether they think it's sweet or not. Because for them, what do they think is sweet? Right? Stinky tofu. Right? So that's the point, you know. That's for them is nectar. Right? So you have to purify the senses a bit. Purify the mind. So you find what's going to be the best way to get it to go through. But what you're giving has to be Krishna consciousness. You can't change the Krishna consciousness. It has to be Krishna consciousness in such a way that they'll accept it. That's why if we're known as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which is officially the registered name, then, you know, you get something in there. But if we're known as the Hare Krishna movement or the Hare Krishnas, then people are always saying Hare Krishna. They're always saying Krishna's name. So they'll get so much more benefit. Because generally they won't say International Society for Krishna Consciousness. They may say ISKCON, right? But they will say Hare Krishnas. So then they get the benefit. You just find different ways to work it in. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is we're saying that the karmis don't like things we do, but the karmis don't like anything anybody does except themselves. What they do is the only thing they like. What the other person does is not good. You know what I'm saying? Like I remember, you're in Italy. Doesn't matter, let's say you're in one region and you have a pizza there and it's great. And if you go to another region, they say, what do you want on your pizza, this and that. If you say what was in that other area, they'll go, that's not pizza. And if you're in the south, they have their olive oil, very, very rich and like that, very oily, like that. And the north oil, that's light and no substance. And in the north, and that other stuff's too heavy and not refined. That's the whole point. Nobody likes what anybody else does. That's just the way it is. And then thinking that we'll come across this universal thing that everybody will like? No. Unless it's, to do with eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. it's not going to happen. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. It doesn't matter how good it is to one person, another person will say it's bad. So we can't go by that. We have to go. Are people taking up interest in Krishna consciousness? Or is it moving forward? And all the other people, they're talking bad about it, but they're talking. Because if they want to refer to us in a bad way, what do they have to say? They'll always say Hare Krishna. They have to. So that's it. Everybody's forced to chant the holy name. You know what I'm saying? So use your intelligence, see what things people are interested in. You know, places, moods, so you find, let's say, if you go to this kind of program or festival, then people are more open, and other kinds of festivals are not. So then you go to the ones that are. You know, you go to this place, they are, another place they're not, you go to that place. You find by approaching this particular group, they are more favorable than that group, you approach this group. You find wherever is favorable, where people are taking. Because that's happening now. After some time, it'll change. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. I like that. Okay?
Maharaj, we have started some classes, Bhagavad Gita classes. So there are two families coming. They are very much associated with Ramakrishna Mission and Chinmaya Mission also.
Okay.
So whenever we give classes, they always bring up, or in messages also, for the organ, they always bring up some quotations of Chinmaya Mission or Ramakrishna Mission.
Good.
Then we always defeat them or something like that.
Right.
And after that, they all say, please come and hear once Chinmaya Mission. Then the organizer of the class is telling, if you are interested in Chinmaya Mission and Ramakrishna Mission, you can go there only. Don't come to our classes. Now 10 sessions are over and they are regular for all those 10 sessions.
Yes.
They are not missing only. And directly we are telling that if you are interested there, you go. Don't come here. Right. The culture and
prasadam. Yeah, it's all that. It makes sense because the other things don't make sense. They sound nice, but they don't make sense. Any path, you know, gives the same result. How does that make sense? It sounds fabulous, but it doesn't make any sense. So what we say may or may not say it sounds fabulous, but it makes sense. Mm-hmm. So we're known as of any group. You know, around the world, that we have answers to questions that no one else can answer. They may like us or not like us, but they know we have answers.
That's what they say, that we are also answers for the world. And one couple, like after 3-4 sessions, they are Bengalis, they gave everything up, they are chanting, they are offering boga and onion garlic. First they thought onion garlic is vegetarian, when we explained that how it is not.
Because then that's vegetarian, then there's pure vegetarian.
That scientifically and according to scripture, when we explained, we just accepted and they are doing it.
Prabhupada said one conversation that Vivekananda was asked so many questions and he could not answer them. He said, Yatomattas over.
Yeah, yeah. Like that, or they just go silent or do something stupid.
And also, when you ask if everything is one, why can't you eat chicken? So then it's okay, I can take chicken. Then you started eating.
Yeah, yeah, if it's all one, but then if everything's one, you can eat your grandmother also. You know, and your grandmother's more kind of plump than his grandmother, so we prefer your grandmother.
They say RK Mission is Ramakrishna Mission, Murgi Mission.
Yes, the Murgi Mission. Prabhupada actually wrote a drama, a one-act drama called the Murgi Mission. You come across it? They got it. It was in one of those, either the Gaudiya or the Harmonist or one of those ones. Prabhupada wrote it. It's a one-act play, but it's in Bengali. And I think it's called Murgi Mission. And I think it takes place in a tea stall. And two guys are discussing it like that. You know, one who's joined this and the other one, and you know, like that. It's a whole. You know, so what he's explaining about how nice the mission is, but he's explaining it in a way of showing how stupid it is. That's something. You know. You know, it's like, you know, we're sannyasis, but we don't have to follow any rules. Isn't that great? You know, that kind of stuff. You know. You had something?
No,
it's answered. Okay. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes, the Brajavasis played with Krishna, who is perceived by those involved in material happiness, Maya Ashritanam, as an ordinary human, Nara Dadakena. The Jnanis have realization of Krishna, but they cannot play with him. The Dasya Bhaktas worship Krishna in reverence, but they are not qualified to play with Krishna. The Karmis have no realization of Krishna, nor worship, since they have no respect for him. So what to speak of playing with him? And the Brajabasis played with him. Though he is complete in bliss, they gave him more intense bliss than the pastimes of prema. And they also attained remarkable bliss in all ways. So the point is the principle is the bliss. Then you can improve the intensity. So it's not the intensity that's important. It's actually the Krishna consciousness that's important, right? Because otherwise we may mistake and think things in our life that create intensity. You know, like how you say it? Village talk and creates intensity. Like that, right? So that's the point, so that's attractive because of the intensity. But the point is because it's materialness, it doesn't give any benefit, it doesn't give any taste. But Krishna consciousness, then that, even if it's not intense, gives a taste, and then as it intensifies, it gives more and more taste. And they also attain remarkable bliss in all ways. Therefore, more than all others, they were fortunate. Krita punya. This is, of course, a material viewpoint. For the Nityasiddha inhabitants of Raja, who surpass the Jnanis and Dasya Bhaktas by far, the cause of playing with Krishna cannot be material piety. Here, punya can only mean activities pleasing to the Lord, by which the Lord comes under the devotee's control. So, anytime it's talking about punya in relationship to the Lord's associates, then it can only mean those activities that are pleasing to him. It cannot mean material piety. That's for the karmis and jnanis and yogis. That's material piety. But by that, you can't get Krishna.
You know, the definition of punya is being defined, you know, in context of bhakti. So when you say about pap, it means sin in the other sense. But then in case of in the bhakti sect, it will mean offenses to devotees?
No, it just means not pleasing to Krishna. So that could be offenses to devotees, offenses to the name, offense to the Dham, not being Krishna conscious, being materialistic. It can mean anything.
Mm-hmm.
Piety means connected, pleasing to Krishna. Impiety means not pleasing to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
That's the simple definition. Means that for the materialist, their piety fits in, is called piety because indirectly it's pleasing to Krishna that they're following his shastra, so therefore they're progressing in the direction towards him, but because they have no devotion to him, they'll never get to it. They'll only get up to that level that they're interested in, karma, jnana, yoga, and stop there. They won't get to bhakti. But because they're following the lifestyle, the recommendations, and that a devotee follows, that's why it's pleasing. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like so that's all. But it's not that it's actual piety, because it's temporary. But when you do something actually pleasing to Krishna directly, it's eternal. Like that. So then that's actual piety. So that's why there's confusion, because we look at it from the material definition of piety rather than the transcendental definition. Right? Okay, so thank you.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema.